I keep saluting. I don't know.
The salute emoji is like my favorite emoji right now.
It is a really good one.
It's incredible. It's like when people aren't expecting that, you're just saluting.
Wait, is
away.
It this or is it this? I forget.
Yeah, it's that.
It's two?
I think so.
What's different between a full hand salute and a two-fingered salute?
Oh, Sylvia, I don't know. I don't know.
I just almost had a great punchline to that.
What?
It doesn't even make sense.
It's a whole hand.
It is the hand. I knew it.
Welcome to Talking July with Chris Savage, the show that's serving up the loudest takes on building businesses, top-notch products, and unforgettable brands. I'm here with Blaine Bolos and Ramon Barrios, co-founders of Cast Magic, an epic AI transcription and content creation tool that I've been having a ton of fun with over the last few months. I'm excited to dive into your backstory and go deep on content creation. But first, we got to start with our favorite question. This podcast is called Talking Too Loud because when I get excited about something, I cannot control the volume of my voice. So I have to ask Blaine and Ramon, what has got you talking too loud these days?
All right, I guess I'll go. There's two of us, so there's a little bit of both of us. What's got me talking too loud? I literally just got married. So this is my first interview since I've gotten back. It was awesome.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's huge.
It was super exciting. It was super fun. Ramon was there. Our other co-founder, Justin, was there. We were in Mexico. It was a nice little break, and like now we're back to things. But like that was super exciting, and I'm super excited to share our first like actual work thing with you guys.
What was your favorite part?
I think just being like, it felt like a vacation with all my favorite people in the world. Cause we did a little destination. I feel like today, there's, you know, relationships, like you maintain them over like further distances. You've got like video, you've got phones, everyone can stay in touch. So I was like thinking about it. I was like, anywhere we're doing a wedding is a destination wedding. So we may as well make it a destination wedding.
That's awesome.
So yeah, it was a lot of fun.
That's so fun.
That's very cool.
And then Blaine told me he's leaving Cast Magic to become a wedding planner now. I said, talking too loud.
I said, oh my God, thank God I don't have to worry about any other logistics or planning or anything like that. And I can just focus on content and startups.
That's amazing. Yeah. And Ramon, obviously you're talking too loud about the wedding.
Yeah, exactly. Same exact. Blaine and I are always excited about the same things. But in my world, I think there's two things that have me talking too loud. In my personal world is golf, just because, you know, it's a sport that I grew up playing since I was a little kid, and I kind of abandoned it, and I'm starting to pick it back up. And in Miami right now, the weather is just epic to play golf. Blaine and I would sometimes go at this time on Fridays together to the golf course by us. But in the summer humidity, it was just brutal. It was really hot. And so now it's the perfect time of the year to pick that up. And then in my work life, what has me talking too loud is just the power of hiring and like hiring the right people. It's just everything falls top down from that. And I'm increasingly just feeling more and more convinced that there's almost no better ROI of time for a founder than who they source. And there's also this fascinating dynamic with recruiting that it's kind of a chicken and the egg too, in terms of like, especially in early in your career, you don't have the network. It's really hard to attract the right people. And so that's when the skill has to come at surface even more, because you don't have a pool of people to select from. And so, yeah, it's like you have to get wins under your belt to continue to attract better and better talent. But you just hire the right people and magic just happens. So I'm really excited about that.
You're definitely right there that if you hire the right people, the magic happens, and that it's hard. And that's crazy important, but it's like, it's a magnifying effect. Like you get the right people and they get the right people and they get the right people.
Right.
So it's interesting. It's a very good thing to pay attention to. And I think a very good thing to like, I don't know. I think if it's hard, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because it means that like when you get someone, hopefully they are like actually a better fit. Mm-hmm. And when it's too easy, that's when it's like, you can have a whole other set of problems.
I mean, especially because time is the big opponent for startups, especially bootstrapped ones. So, it's something that I'm closely paying more and more attention to, the art of hiring.
That's awesome.
It got me curious about like you guys as co-founders. Do you feel like like you're more on the business side and Blaine, you're more on the content side? Does it feel like you're kind of sharing both worlds at the moment? I mean, Chris is also another co-founder, so.
Yeah. It's funny. Like we got lucky. Like Ramon and I started working together actually as podcast hosts. So that's how we started working together. And, you know, he was kind of more in charge of the guests and like the biz op side of things. And then I started taking over like the content workflow and like that sort of thing. And that actually led us into starting Cast Magic. So it's just really funny having someone who's, you know, we've got so much in common, but like our skill sets, like we overlap a little bit. So if like you see us online and you see our content, you'll be like, oh, those guys are like pretty much doing the same thing. But like, actually, like my skill set and my domain is like closer to like product, like workflows, like content, that side of the equation. And then Ramon is like more on the growth side and partnerships, like biz dev and like that side of things. So it's just cool to be able to work in lockstep like that.
Yeah, I would add that Blaine is like really exceptional at operations too. And so that's where we're pretty yin yang, where, you know, I'll come up with some crazy ideas or something, but then Blaine will give him structure as well. So that helps.
That's awesome. And can you take us into that moment? So you're working on this podcast together and you realize like, hey, there's some production challenges and there's something we can do more efficiently. Like, how did that morph into this company?
So I've had two venture-backed companies in the past. The first one was this company, Seeded. They're still growing. They're doing well. Second one I started was in the e-com enablement space. And that's how I started working with Ramon on DTC Pod, where we interview all these great consumer brand founders. So we end up shutting that company down. I have like way too much time on my hands and I'm just like going all in on the podcast. I'm like, let's get the best guests. Let's have like these great interviews. And then I'm like, you know, having these interviews, we're having these amazing conversations. I'm like, how do I share like what's happening with the world? Like the world needs to hear these like amazing conversations and insights. And so I would like read the transcript. I'd pull things out and I was like, wait a minute, like this is fun, but like I don't have, you know, 20 hours a week to just create this sort of content. It's like a massive lift. And then I would try to bring in, you know, a virtual assistant or VA to, you know, go in, find out the interesting parts of the conversations, turn it into blurbs that I could post on social, turn it into content for our website. And then, you know, we would work with great people, but they would just miss the mark. And then it was around that time Ramon was like, Blaine, forget trying to like coach up our like VAs on this. Like, I've got this agency that's going to not only handle the podcast production, but like we'll pay them like $5,000 a month and they'll be able to like do all these social assets that like you've been trying to get right. And, you know, it was still like hit or miss. I was like, still paying all this money. We're getting these assets, but it's still like I would feel better just doing it myself. I just don't have that time. And that was right around the time where AI was sort of popping up. You saw it in ChatGPT. I think this was like GPT-3 at the time when we were like, hey, let's like actually build something out of this. But, you know, there were different challenges to doing it. You couldn't feed it an entire transcript. The context windows weren't long enough. Like the AI wouldn't transcribe something itself. So it was kind of a busted sort of ecosystem to pull off the things that we were trying to do. So Ramon's like, hey, man, I've got, you know, one of my really good buddies, Justin. He's an awesome developer. You know, maybe he'd be interested in something like this. And then Ramon got chatting with Justin, and Justin, you know, I thought was going to be like, guys, get the hell out of here. I'm not working on your stupid side project. And Justin was like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. Let's build something. So that's how we got our start.
One thing I'll add that I think it's an important detail too, is like the only reason we were able to pay $5,000 a month for an agency to even do it was, so my previous company Trend was also venture backed, and this was our lead funnel for Trend and then for Blaine's Omni panel. And so it was the business funding it. But looking back in time, there were high chances that the podcast would have just fallen flat, because as a solo creator, I mean, we couldn't afford $5,000 a month from the P&L of the podcast. I mean, the podcast didn't even have a P&L. We would just close sponsors here and there. And so unless we were doing it full time, we wouldn't even have had the money to pay for the agency. So not only did we get excited about being able to build a solution to solve the workflow, but to also make it accessible for all of the people that we knew, like now could get access to this. Like it wouldn't just replace their agency. It's just they probably couldn't even afford the agency to justify from the podcast itself.
Interesting. And something that I want to dig into here is like, so you see this opportunity because you believe so much in the podcast, right? Like, you're like, this podcast is great. Like, it's got great content. It's got great guests. How do you know it's great?
We were seeing the signs, at least in terms of like the numbers, the growth, you know, also like, I think part of the equation is doing it because like it's growing and because the numbers are showing it. But like part of it is doing it because you like doing it. And these were conversations that like I love having. And even for me as like a curious entrepreneur, I was like, I want to know what the heck is happening in these conversations. So I think part of it was like saying, oh, this podcast is great. So let's build a tool. But part of it is saying like, hey, I really like all the things that this podcast brings into my life, my world, all of this sort of thing. But the one thing I really hate, like, I think any good entrepreneur is a little bit lazy. And I think for me, it was like, all of that is not worth like writing for, you know, 20 or 30 hours every week. But like, I'd still love to have all these conversations. I love to like put out this content. I just don't want to do all of that. That's like way too much.
Well, the way that I thought it was great or good is because of the opportunities that it gave to us. I think if you look at a podcast from sponsorship and ad revenue point of view, that's actually not the biggest ROI that a podcast will give you. For me, it was a vehicle. It was sort of like a Trojan horse for me to be going back to what I started with recruiting. You know, I would have the head of growth of a e-commerce company that grew from 1 million to 100 million in like, you know, 2 years. And then I had the person that did the growth there, and I'm asking them challenges about my own business. And then I would ask them after, do you know a person, you know, even I ended up recruiting someone that was a guest on my podcast, and it was Shireen. She, you know, she's dealt with 9 figures of growth. And she's like, I want to help you. I'll contract for you and get into the weeds of your business. And she helped me with my previous business. Like, that wouldn't have been possible without the podcast. And also, I would just get the biggest brands as guests, and they would become a customer of my company. And the cold email response was way different when I would ask someone to come as a guest versus, hey, do you want to like learn more about this product that I have? And I wouldn't even sell them the business when they were guests. They would just ask about it. Like, you just build relationships with people that will last a really long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of my other favorite parts is like, you know, I'm not someone who loves like networking events, right? Like, you go to these things, you meet all these people, like it's a crapshoot. But what I liked about this was like, there was automatically this filter. Like, we knew the types of people that we wanted to talk to. So it was like every week there was someone on our calendar knew that we were going to meet, and we'd have a great conversation with them. We'd get to know them. And some of the conversations, like in the long term, never go anywhere, right? Like, sometimes people, you know, you're just not a fit for each other in terms of your preferences, if you like each other or whatever. But like, there were a percentage of people who we ended up becoming like great friends with, business partners with, like building like really strong professional relationships with. And it was just like that exercise of like having one new person every week, getting to chat with them, getting to know them. And, you know, for me, that's a lot, right?
It's a lot
over the course of time. So
I love that. And I think if you could find a way of doing something like in your business, but there's like some part of it that's like a guaranteed benefit, it's a lot easier to keep doing it. And when often many things, you got to do them over and over and over to get better and better and better, compound them. It's like, well, that's the secret, is like finding the thing you can do in the short term. And so, yeah, because I've seen the same exact thing you're talking about, and I didn't even expect to. Like, I just thought it'd be fun. I thought I'd connect with people, I'd have these conversations I want to have. And it's like, oh, actually, like, there's so much more that can come from it. And then, by the way, if it comes from it and you keep doing it, that's what adds up to something that works.
Well, I think if you do it from the perspective of trying to make it your main profession in a career, I think that would be way harder in a way different conversation to actually make it work, because the stress to make this thing ROI positive and earn enough ad revenue, then you're creating content for different intentions. You're setting up the conversations differently. They're not as organic. So, it's fun.
You're beholden
when it's
to
like
the business model, is what you're saying.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So like, now if you have advertisers, you're talking about things that you might not care as much about because you think it's on topic for what the advertiser wants, as an example. And then therefore the content like might not actually be as good because you don't care. Yeah. And it doesn't perform as well. And so it's just like this, like, you get to flip it around when you change the business model.
Well, and one great example there, even with us, was we had a lot of sponsors. I think our first year, me and Ramon, we had like probably 40 grand worth of sponsorships at least. Like we'd had single sponsors that were that much. And then we were kind of thinking about it. Cast Magic started doing really well. And I was like, you know what? Like, yes, there is sort of a business here, but what makes more sense? Should we just focus on like growing the business that's like growing and actually generating a lot of revenue? Or should we like be spending hours going back and forth with sponsors about like, hey, could you actually change this in the ad? Or like, I'm not seeing the attribution from XYZ channel. So me and Ramon made the call. We're like, you know what? Like, no more sponsors. Like, we're just doing this because we like to do it. It's beneficial. We'll continue to grow it like we're growing it, but we're not going to take on that, you know, challenge of running it as its own business because it ultimately requires operations, becomes distracting. So,
and don't get me wrong, I wish that we were getting sponsor revenue. Like, there's this angel and devil that I fight all the time. I'm like, my ego is like, no, it's a business. Like, it has to generate revenue and everything. But the only justifiable reason why I'm okay with that is we dog food our product. We dog food Cast Magic. We use it every single week. And so it's hard to fight that. That, you know, that's pretty justifiable.
Well, that's the most scalable impact you're going to find, right? It's like, it, you know, you guys doing the show yourself, I mean, that would be very hard to walk away from. I imagine that was an extreme. You're talking about it now like it's an easy decision. I imagine there's a lot of people listening who are like, what? Like, you turned down what?
But like, I'm like, it, yes.
Yeah,
Sylvia's, I love like, it. Keep going.
But it is interesting because it's like, that's such a hard decision. But then this other benefit of like, if you can stay closer and actually dog food your own product, and that means you make decisions weeks faster, months faster than you would otherwise on like what to build next, what not to build, things that are broken. Like that can add up in a way that it doesn't just impact you. It impacts every customer, and software scales in the same way, you know, different, but extremely scalable like content. And so it can have this like magnifying impact, but it's taking a bet. It's a tough bet to make.
Yeah. And the reason I like it is because like, I guess I'm closer to the product side of things. So I get to like have my own lens on what I want and what should be built, as like anyone who's like working in product has their own perspective. And then I also get to have the perspective of the customers. Cause I work, you know, in the beginning when we first started, I was doing all the support. I was like talking to all the customers, and now I run like the community. So I'm like plugged in, and we know we're like very close on the ground with what's getting built. So it's just very cool to have that perspective of A, knowing from your own perspective, okay, what do I want this product to do selfishly just for me? And then B, knowing, okay, also what do I want this product, or what does everyone else want this product to do, and manage those expectations together to be able to make the calls. Because sometimes even when people are asking for something, maybe you're like, oh, actually, I could solve it this way, or maybe there's a better implementation for it, or what they're actually asking for is this, not this, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's also like really easy to fall away from that as you scale, because you look for other people to take on a lot of those things. There was a moment in time when I was not dog fooding the product as much. Like, I was still using it, but not in the way I am today, where I'm like literally in it every single day doing stuff. And it makes a very big difference when you're still in it every single day. Like, just also the understanding of the pain. I think about that a lot. Like, the pain of for a customer if something doesn't work. It's one thing if you see in a graph, it's like 10,000 people tried this thing and it didn't work for like 100 of them. And it's a very another thing if you're one of the 100.
Well, so much of like building any company, really, whether it's software or not, is empathy and being able to understand what like people are going through. And when you're using the product and someone, if you have no context in terms of what's going on and you're surveying support tickets, you're like, oh, who's more mad? That's who I'm going to like prioritize, right? But like when you're actually in the product, like you've got now a perspective because like, you know, the pain and you know, like, you're like, oh yeah, I've gone through that. Like, that's serious. We actually really need to fix that. And we need to prioritize it. Cause so much, going back to even what Ramon was talking about, it's all like in startups, it's all prioritization and opportunity costs. It's not about what you're going to do. It's also when you're going to do it, right?
What I will add to that too is like, there's a interesting dynamic with like AI specifically, which is like the space moves so freaking fast. And it's like, now it's not just, you know, our feedback is growing from the customers. And then my Twitter feed is exploding with new stuff with AI. And so, you know, you're a bootstrap company and it's like, how much is distribution and marketing? How much is innovation? How much is like setting up the infrastructure and solving customers' problems? And like that balancing act is like really hard right now.
Yeah, let's dig in there. I'm also realizing that we haven't said really, really clearly what Cast Magic is. So maybe why don't one of you explain to everybody what is Cast Magic, and then let's jump into this challenge and like the opportunity that you have.
Sure. So Cast Magic is one platform to take any form of media, whether it's a conversation, audio file, podcast, Zoom recording, video, etc. We transcribe it. And from that transcription, we're able to use AI to generate whatever type of output you want. So you can think of it as one place to really manage your entire content workflow, right? Creators today are creating content not just on one platform. They tend to create, you know, they have their long form pillar content, and they're like kind of pumping that out to all their different platforms, whether it's in the format of a podcast or a newsletter or their LinkedIn strategy or everything. So Cast Magic kind of becomes the hub using AI to like manage and scale your content workflow with AI. So that's basically what it is and what we do.
Perfect. Great. And then like,
perfect.
And then how do you balance this? Everyone's Twitter feed is like this. Like if you follow this stuff, it's like new innovation, new crazy promise. Like, and then like they don't all deliver, but they are shifting customer expectations. How do you balance like the speed of the change with delivering real value to customers?
Yeah, I think innovation is a luxury, I think, that a bootstrap company just doesn't really have. Like there's other ways to say this too, which is we're customers number one of our product. We're here to solve a problem. We're not here to guess what are the problems that we need to solve in the future. And we've built a business by just solving a pain point that we had. And we continue to stack on those pain points and hoping that if we have a true platform that solves an entire workflow and is the foundation of like your content hub and everything, innovation can always be added on. I guess I'm just trying to put it in a way that like we just don't have R&D capacity to try and like create the best in our own model. That's just not the business we're in yet. I think hopefully in one day, like we have the resources and capability to do that. But we would be out of business probably if we like try to put that much engineering resource on sort of guessing. And a lot of like the AI stuff that you try really early, it gets people excited and you can kind of see it, but it doesn't solve the entire workflow problem. And so, you know, it's like AI generated video. It's like it gets people really excited, but like I still have way more problems than just having AI generate this video for me. And so we think that like by solving a workflow solution, we can always add things later. Most of the generative AI companies you see have incredible churn. Why? Because they're not a product, they're a feature. And so we just stay hyper focused on building a product and hoping that we can just continue to add AI layers as they come out. You know, it's not like we ignore them. We add them when we think the functionality is at a point that it can solve and like be easily implemented into your workflow and actually continue to create value for you.
Yeah. And Chris, just kind of piggybacking off that, I think so much of what you see, there's like so much hype, right? Whether it's on Twitter or wherever, where people are like do this crazy demo of AI doing something. And we see it all the time. But like Ramon said, thinking about like, is this an actual problem that the user needs solved? Or does this just like look really cool? And those are two different things. You might have a video go super viral on Twitter, like, oh my God, I just built an AI tool that does like XYZ. And everyone sees it, everyone gets FOMO. But like, if you actually think about it, you're like, no one's actually like using that within their workflow. That's not a sticky thing. That's a cool feature. It's a fad. Like, that's not an actual thing. So part of us, like when we think about product, we just need to be disciplined about what we're building. Is it an actual problem? And so many times Ramon will even come to me, he'll send me these videos and he'll be like, Blaine, we should totally build this. And I'm like, if I can't figure out like the use case and if this is like an actual problem to build, then we'll like, we can talk about it later. And so many times I'm like, dude, that's really awesome. As soon as we figure out like where the problem is and I can map that to like a user concern or something that we've been talking about or where we're thinking, boom, we'll build it. But like, you know, you can't just like build stuff for the sake of building it because and assuming people will come and use it, because a lot of times they won't.
Yeah, I like how you both put that. You can't like innovate just for the sake of innovating, right? Like if that doesn't work, especially in early startup days. I had a question for all of you, actually, in early startup days and then like when you're further down the line, like Wistia. So you're at this place, you just said, Blaine, where like if you can map it to a use case, you're like, I'm on it, we can build it. At what point, like, do you feel like a company starts to get like a user flagged product request that then the company pays attention to? It's not like it didn't start with your idea. It's not like I'm having this struggle. It's like the users flag it and then you're like, oh shit.
I mean, that definitely happens for us, right? Like, I'm not saying like I'm omnipotent. I know every single feature to build.
Oh, that's
like,
good. That's what we thought you were saying.
Yeah,
oh,
no. Okay. Yeah. So like, absolutely. There's a lot of times like, you know, users will flag stuff and I'm like, yeah, that's actually, I hadn't thought of that. That's a great idea, you know? Right. So I think that starts happening very early on. I think being a founder and having a product vision is important, but that doesn't mean that that vision is not flexible and not open to you know, the best decision, the best feedback that's coming through at any given moment.
What I will add to that is like, we recently blamed it this whole CX flow where like intercom is mapped with linear and like, Blaine, I haven't told you this, but like I went on linear and I'm seeing these things and I'm like, this is really freaking cool. Like there's like really useful stuff going in there from the customers. And I saw like five or six tickets that are being surfaced in linear and there were things I hadn't thought about. And I'm like, whoa, this is actually pretty useful because 90% of the things that the customers will tell you they want, it's not that it's not useful. It's just that it's not implemented literally in the way that they present it to you. You have to digest it and say, oh, this is like actually this other problem that we're already thinking about. But I think to answer your question, Sylvie, it's the only way that you're like, wow, okay, this one thing we absolutely need to build is by dogfooding and using your own product and understanding your own product. Because otherwise, there's just no way to know if this is a problem that you think that 90% of other podcasters or video creators or, you know, content creators are having. But when you see it and you know you've been having it, but you didn't know how to articulate it, you're like, okay, we should dig deeper. This might be something that all of our customers are facing as a problem. But without the podcast, like I just probably couldn't know for sure. Anything could sound cool too. And it's just not, it doesn't have utility.
And Chris, I'm interested to hear how you guys do it, but I'll share how like we think about like, you know, user feedback and incorporating that product. Basically every week, like I'm syncing pretty much daily with like our lead support agent, kind of just like talking through like, what's going on? What are we seeing? You know, that sort of thing. Then we've got intercom synced with linear so that like when issues come up, we can kind of assign them and create tickets. So now we've got like the case that's associated with the actual customer ticket and like their rationale and all of that sort of stuff. And then weekly in our dev review on Mondays, one of the first things we do is like we talk about like our macro initiatives that we're going after. And then we look through all of the user requests that have made it into linear. We talk about them as a dev team. We're like, are these things that, you know, we've considered? Are these things that are being solved in projects that are coming up? Are they completely irrelevant or are they something that we need to do and we need to do now and, you know, they need to take precedent over everything else? So that's kind of like how we think about, you know, obviously we've got our own like macro product direction that we want to go, but like that's how we're able to like keep the users, you know, wants and desires kind of like pretty much in lockstep with how we're building products. So yeah, I'd love to know how you guys think about that stuff as well.
Yeah, I mean, so we did similar things, probably less organized than you at the beginning. And, you know, I think I don't know if you have anyone in product management. Do they want to have that title?
I mean, I guess that's effectively me. I'm not that good because okay. I'm a little too ADD for it. But
that's fine. Yeah. So we didn't have anyone there for a long time, like a really long time. People would ask me that question. I'm like, I guess it's a bunch of us. And like, who's synthesizing the feedback from all the different places, from sales, from support, from internal? Who's Matt figuring out how we're going to market the thing we're going to build? It was us, it was founders, it was like early people. Today, the way it looks for us is we basically have a bunch of different product teams that each own a different customer problem. And so we don't presume to know the solutions that they are going to need to create to help solve the problem. But we do think that the problems fit together as like, hey, if you were to look at what a video marketing platform is, it should have all of these different types of things in there. And so there's like a decision that's like, how much should we be investing overall into the different problems? Like how much opportunity, how good are we already? Like where should it go? And then very similarly, like the feedback comes in, it comes in through our support channels and through sales, a lot of recorded calls. And then there's also research that happens. And that goes into a categorization of like, what's everybody talking about? Like, what are they asking for? And it gets like ranked based on how much people are asking for it. And we also know which product team owns that. And then on each product team, you have like a product manager, you have a tech lead who's in charge of the engineering, like helping to figure out the higher level, like architecture questions, stuff like that. And you have a product designer and they work together on the solutions. And so most of the time today, our goal is that like over 90% of the time, probably a lot more, like 98% of the time, it is not a top down what we should build in terms of solutions. It is top down on like what problems to work on. And then every once in a while, it's still exactly the same thing that you're talking about today, which is it's trying to take this mess of data that's qualitative and quantitative. And like literally sometimes it's the passion of the person's voice when they're talking about the issue they're running into with your own, you know, putting your own frustrations and stuff together that actually makes the call over like, hey, what's the most valuable thing we could do in the next 2 weeks on this issue? And like oftentimes that 2 weeks is part of a much larger thing, but that's kind of how it works. And every once in a great while, there is something that we see a solution that we're like, hey, we think this is really important. It's going to be hard to prioritize across these things. And it is like a top-down, we call it, I guess, a directive. And it's funny, I can think of like two directives that have been issued in like the last 2 years. And they were both like pretty small things. Both exciting things, but that's abnormal for the system, if that makes sense.
100%. It's pretty cool to see how that like all breaks down. And I think what you mentioned about like problems and working from problems and not necessarily knowing the solutions, like that's so important. And that's what even Ramon and I have been talking about with like the designers that we onboard. Part of it is like not telling them, hey, here's how to design it, right? It's about telling them, here's the problem that we need solved. And then we can like evaluate the implementation.
I think if you look at it and you assume that you don't know it's going to work 100% of the time, it almost doesn't matter what percentage. It could be 30%. It could be 50% of the time. You're right. It could be 80% of the time. But if you don't know 100% of the time it's going to work, you basically need as many shots on goal as you can get. And it actually ultimately becomes about speed. And it's about speed to get learnings to ultimately have your pace of improvement be as high as possible. There's actually a great book by Patty McCord, who is head of HR at Netflix. And she talks about this in there, where they basically built their entire culture around simplifying and removing to give people as much time to execute as possible. Because if you don't know what's going to work, that is basically, if you have the right people, that's basically your X factor, is like, how much time can you give people to actually execute? And I think about that a lot in terms of all of this stuff.
For sure. We just hired our first like sort of full-time designer. And I'm surprised we've made it this far, because there's like so much surface level to the product now, and feedback is so much faster now. That, you know, we would sit down together and Blaine would sort of scope some stuff out and Justin would just put it in the platform and kind of design it. But now, you know, you have to feed it's basically a puzzle now. When like we look at what we want, what the customers need, and what's innovation, like everything, and we're like, yeah, like we can do that, but like how would that even fit architecturally into the platform? And everything, and also not forgetting about like what needs to get removed. Like, what did we do in the past that it's just sitting there and it's actually not getting adoption? It's really important to remove as you add as well.
That's a big one.
Yeah, that's really good. Absolutely. It's always fun when you get to that moment when you have like a designer who actually knows what they're doing come in. Because you realize a lot of the best marketing you can do is in the product. And like, you know, if you make something enticing and exciting and easy to understand, people will click on it. And you can spend a lot of time trying to send emails and get people to pay attention that they will not pay attention to. But if they're actually logging in, they're in there, they're like captive. And it's the design is often the difference that gets people going. Okay, we're going
We went in a very different direction.
But yeah, I love this.
It's beautiful. It's exciting.
It is. And we got here from basically the questions we had, but like organically. So that's lovely. So you see so much content in your platform, right? And people are breaking it down to all of these different ways. Like, you've had some content recently that I've told you both, like I came across virally, the like overview, kind of like the almost like ad of the person in your podcast about the cookies thing.
Yeah.
Which I thought was so cool. Can you just like kind of break down that example for people so that they understand like the types of things that you're seeing, that you're doing, that people are doing with Cast Magic?
Yeah, for sure. I think, Blaine and I interviewed this girl who started a cookie company. The cookie company grew to 300 million. And we were like, this is a really cool. Yeah, this is a really cool.
300 million of cookies a year. No big deal.
Yeah. So so now by default, we will be a $300 million company as well.
There you go.
So Blaine and I, as you mentioned earlier, we have all these great stories. And so we're clipping stuff and posting it on socials. And nothing is kind of really working. Volume is important in social media, but volume without seeing progress is like throwing stuff at a wall that's not really sticking, and you just keep doing it.
Yeah,
it sucks. You just keep doing it over and over, but you see no progress. And so we kind of got some inspo from in Cast Magic, it'll give you outputs of here's a script for a reel or a YouTube video based on your interview. And we kind of mapped that out after working with some YouTubers and seeing YouTubers, some of them like will tee up the question in the interview. So it's already scripted for virality, which like I don't love doing it as a host because it makes the conversation not feel so organic.
It ends up feeling fake.
Yeah, exactly. But then we were like, well, why don't we just recap what happened on the episode and do net new content from the learnings of the episode? Because clipping will miss, when a person is watching something on social media, it's like the dopamine effect. They need it right away. They have no context. It's, you know, if it's a guest face, even on the clip, people like familiarity. They don't know who the founder of a cookie company or whatever DTC company is. So that only works with like celebrities and things like that. So when you see clipping companies claiming they're getting a billion views, we've talked with all these kids, which were mostly kids at the time for some reason running these agencies. And I'm like, yeah, well, you're clipping for us a personality. You're clipping for Joe Rogan. You're clipping for like famous people. Those videos are going to go viral no matter what. And so we essentially started working with AI and stuff to script it in a way that makes a story exciting and has a storyline from beginning to end and a call to action. It starts with a hook, it has a body, and it has a call to action, and it worked. And like, you know, the video did like 3 million impressions, almost 2,000 likes, over 200,000 plays. And then I've done it multiple times and it's working. And so I think like that's what AI is here for. AI is here not so you can do less, but now you can do more of what you cannot delegate as a creator, which is making the content.
Yeah, and I think one of the most interesting things, so part of like doing Cast Magic, we also, you know, obviously had to start another podcast because we realized we're talking to like consumer brand founders over here that has absolutely nothing to do with Cast Magic. And then we're like, let's launch a series where we talk with the best content creators in the world. So we launched this podcast called Uploading, where we bring them on, and constantly Ramon and I are just like learning, and like they're telling us. And I think one of the biggest learnings is the pieces of content that are like going viral and like really performing, like they're not going viral and performing by accident. Like the thought and the editing and the scripting and like the engineering behind those pieces of content are just crazy. Like, and it comes off as natural, and that's why you get hooked. But like, you know, Ramon mentioned hook, body, CTA, but like, no, it's like hook and then leading question and then rehook and then rehook again. And all of this is happening within like a 30-second clip, right? So what we found, one of the best ways to create content, we've got the source information we're starting with, and we've got AI to transcribe it. But then when you're looking for an output, sometimes the best way is to think in templates and actually work backwards. So what we'll do is we'll find a content format, like a template that's like really working, that's really high performing. And then we basically ask AI to say, hey, take the information that's like in my conversation and map it to this like high performing template that's got all the characteristics that aren't, it's not just telling ChatGPT, hey, make this go viral, because we all know that's going to come up with something that's like super whack and is not going to go viral. But if you kind of take and reverse engineer from content pieces that have actually performed and you understand what's happening structurally, you can map out those scripts and those pieces of content. So it's something that Ramon's done in that cookie example. It's something that I've been able to do as well. And it's fun because you can use it for like, you know, the captions that you're generating. You can use it for the scripting that you're putting together. But like when you start seeing content as like, you know, as more than just meets the eye, then that's where you kind of start to go down the rabbit hole and can create some good stuff.
Did you guys literally ask AI to tell you what the structure of those viral clips were? Like, did you know, like, hook, rehook, you kind of like already knew that vocab?
So basically what I did was I took that format that like actually performed. I used that as like a content sample that like we gave our AI. And then I was basically like, you know, create a piece of content using the information here, but the structure and framework, tone and style of the content sample I'm providing you. And then AI was able to do like a really good job and basically map X to Y and give us what we needed.
And it's almost frustrating how important prompting is. I wish that wasn't the case. That's not the right user experience. For AI, like the quality of what you make out of your content shouldn't be relying upon your skill of prompting. Like, is that really the end all user experience that everyone is just going to have to become a master prompter? I think that can be fixed with UX, UI, and just like really, like that's why we have prompts created by our community that you just click and it'll generate it. And I don't know what the ultimate form factor is going to be of all of this stuff. We have some ideas, but to think it's a chat box is, that's not fair to the user, given to how powerful this technology is, I almost feel like.
And I think the one unique thing at content, which is what makes it really hard to work with like LLMs, is like you need strategy, because content is basically like the content performs basically means that it is like not like 99.9% of all the other content that's out there, right? So it's constantly changing. Like the things that are working today, as soon as you see them working, everyone replicates them because they're working. And then the content that performs tomorrow is inherently something different. So like there's this inherently like human kind of strategy element that we bring into play where we're identifying, we're like, hey, that piece is popping off today. Now, like this is the framework we're working with. And that's kind of been the fun part of like discovering this, is like when you can kind of abstract away the information into it and just understand like the structure, the format, whether it's a video, whether it's a video with a slides or video with like motion or like what's actually happening, you know, you realize that content pieces are like really endless, and it's just understanding like what the formatting is and how to kind of like map the information to that format.
It's very interesting to hear you guys talk through this, because like you've built this thing. This is what everybody else does with your product. You've actually used it successfully. And what I'm noticing here, and it's been my experience using Cast Magic as well, is like it's basically you have like so many divergent proofs of concepts of things that you could do. And so instead of having to come up with these ideas of like, hey, should it be like, what would it be like if I did a script based just on this? Or what would it be like if I had a really long form newsletter on this? Or what would it be like if I just had the bulleted list? Like, you're giving people the options, which then actually makes it a little bit easier to be creative, because you have all these things and you connect them in interesting ways. And it's on you to know what's actually, to have the empathy to know what's actually engaging you on these social channels. Because as your point is so valid, and I think it's like gets completely forgotten, is like, it is constantly changing. And I think it's probably more constantly changing, and tell me if you agree with this, on like the content that's designed to attract attention than it is on the content that's designed to retain.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's like the content that's designed to attract, like there's something different every day. And I think like a great example is like even when TikTok popped up, it was like so different, because everyone was all of a sudden like not doing this like highly produced stuff, and they're doing like super like lo-fi sort of content. And then it starts to go the other way, and then goes back and forth. So yeah, it's like, but that's all about like attracting people, right? Like what's different attracts, for sure.
Yeah, but per platform as well, which is like the reason why creating content is such a big commitment. A lot of people think like AI is going to then, you know, now you're going to spend only 2 hours a week creating content, but the reality is, no, now that you automated all of that and are getting help there, now you should, your content should be different across platforms, or this gives you the opportunity to be omni-channel and be in more platforms. But it is crazy how it is changing. Like, TikTok is like off the cuff content, and then Instagram is more aesthetic, and like visual editing matters more, and then LinkedIn has its own way now, and YouTube Shorts is coming out, and I know like it's also just the beginning, and that doesn't even account for written content too. So yeah,
I mean, this is the challenge, right? Is like it's constantly shifting and changing, and the channels are all different, and their rules are constantly shifting and changing. Do you think they're big enough now that like people don't need to be on every channel? Do you think they should strive to? How do you think about that?
Well, when I started making content not too long ago, just because podcasting is like a really hard form of growth. If you just do podcasting, RSS, there's no algorithm, there's no discovery. And so you have to do the marketing elsewhere. So I started all channels at the same time, and then I stopped. And then I was like, wait, I need a top of funnel. I need to crack one channel that I see the slightest, like, you know, slightest chance of success, that I'm seeing progress. And then once we identify which one is that channel, let's just double down and focus on that channel till we can build an audience there, and then funnel that traffic to the other platforms, because it's just, I'm not a full-time creator. It's not going to be realistic for me. So I started YouTube, Twitter, LinkedIn. I think those were the three. And Instagram. Yeah, we were doing Instagram and TikTok as well. And then LinkedIn, I started seeing success. And I'm like, as soon as I saw success on LinkedIn, I was like, pause everything else. And if you go on our channels and even my YouTube, there's like three whack videos as I was like trying to learn how to do YouTube and being super cringy. But I'm like, it's just wasted effort. If I build the community here and the traffic, then I can just send it, and it's going to solve the cold start problem of every platform. It's extremely hard to break through on an account with zero audience on any platform, unless you're sending in traffic from somewhere else.
Okay. This has been amazing. We're going to get into the rapid fire
section.
We could
have gone for another hour.
I know, we easily could
have. And I never say that.
Easy.
No, Sylvie's in. I can tell you she's in. She's very actively in right now. So I'm going to ask you a question, fast answer. Here we go. What's the best book you've read this year?
Oh, man. I think The Hard Thing About Hard Things was really, really good. Yeah, that was mine.
Horowitz, yeah.
Yep.
I liked Creative Act by Rick Rubin. I think like incredible. As a creative, like just, you know, having a book that's like fresh, has different sort of perspectives and ideas, and almost like validates a lot of like the divergent ways my brain works, like was really cool.
That book's amazing. Okay. Who's your favorite creator right now?
I'll go. I like JT Barnett a lot. He does a lot of stuff at the intersection of like consumer branding, but also like helping companies find creators, and I just think he has like a super solid voice, and the way he like approaches content, it's like fun but it's professional. It's got an edge, but it's not like too weird. It's educated, but it's not too highbrow. So yeah, he'd be my pick.
I think my pick is gonna be Noah Kagan, just because he's so authentic and he's so different as a person, as a human, and you know, Keep Austin Weird, he stays weird and he's truly himself and authentic, and like he's a good writer. So I really like his content.
We're giggling because he came on the show a couple months ago and he kept it
weird. He's real. He's always 100. Done that. Yeah, he's amazing. And Who's your brand crush right now? Any brands you're crushing on?
I think Ramones is Flowdesk.
I like Flowdesk as a business. Linear is Justin's brand crush. It's one we look at, but I think I'm gonna stick to. I'm fascinated by these newsletter platforms. I don't understand how they're all making like $1 million a month. There's something there. So I like Flowdesk has built it through community, has bootstrapped. They have a really healthy business just based on what I've learned. So they're a good model.
Yeah. I like Notion a lot. I love listening to their founders, kind of how they kind of dialed in on this ICP that wasn't truly defined, and then they kind of built this amazing product that they also like dog food, and it was like a super horizontal product, but it went after like these PMs and marketers and everything, and they've obviously grown a lot, and now they, you know, serve creators, they serve like a little bit of everyone. So I really like
I'm gonna throw my answer, because Blaine gave my answer, but that's last night I spent my night reading the Spotify financial reports, so I think that qualifies as a brand crush. And Daniel Ek is like, I think, an amazing CEO. I was like watching their entire stock, they're at an all-time high. I'm like, man, this company's just ripping, and like they just believe so early and continue to be early on a bunch of stuff. So yeah,
awesome. Thank you both so much. Where can people connect with you to learn more?
I guess Blaine and Ramon, you can find us just by our names on LinkedIn, because like that's been popping off for us lately. And then Cast Magic, you can find at castmagic.io or you know, at Cast Magic across all the different social platforms.
And if you come across my YouTube, that was just test runs. That is not my channel.
Be proud.
Ignore
LinkedIn.
That. It's okay.
Be proud. Instead. It's all part of the journey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, guys. I mean, Sylvie, you were really wowed there.
I was really wowed there. I've been using their product, so I feel like I have this sort of like insider. I'm like rooting for the team a little bit. I also didn't expect us to talk as much about like the startup nature of Cast Magic, and that story. Startups in general are fascinating to me. And like how they've been thinking about growth and scale is really interesting. And so I thought there were some great nuggets for anyone who's in the startup space, anyone who's thinking about like how to grow, how to scale, what to prioritize. And it was also just interesting seeing, you know, you and Wistia's perspective in that mix, because you've been a startup and now you're a full-fledged teen. You're an old teen. What are you?
18-year-old? Yeah. No,
you're
it's like
18.
I have a driver's license. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and I love that part when you asked that question and you wanted the different perspectives. And it's interesting because it's like what they're talking about, I know so deeply, and it's like I've lived that world. And to see how much it's changed for where we are now and like what you have to do to get a similar result is just so different at different scales. Yeah. No, they're great. And they know how to podcast. So that's very good. I always love that. And we'll be making some assets with Cast Magic after this.
We sure will.
We sure will.
We sure will.
Well, thanks for joining us today. Please rate and review the show wherever you're consuming it. We really appreciate it. It helps get the word out there. If you have other guests you think we should have on Talking Too Loud, please reach out and let us know. You can find both Sylvie and I on LinkedIn. Pretty active on LinkedIn. A lot going on LinkedIn. And until next time, have a great day.
Talking Too Loud is brought to you by Wistia, hosted by Chris Savage, produced by me, Sylvie Lubau, along with Adam Day. Executive produced by Wistia Studios. This episode was mixed by Maria Passingham. Listen to Talking Too Loud wherever you listen to podcasts. And hey, rate and review us wherever you listen. And check out more content from Wistia Studios at wistia.com.